Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday. It's the 8th of August. Very nice to have you with us on this day at 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. It's a Monday. And, it's hot. It's just hot and steamy and yucky and gross. And, and it was that way all weekend. And I hope you survived it. I hope you made it through and were able to be comfortable in some way, because it just you would be in some sort of place where you were comfortable, and then you would walk out, and it just felt like you walked right into a wall,
a bathtub.
Yeah,
I mean, it was really just gross.
Yeah, and it'll be like that, I guess, up until Wednesday.
Yeah,
and
now,
then
now we know how it feels to live in Florida. When you go from air conditioning to air conditioning to air conditioning.
Although I had family members who spent the last week in Florida and said it was cooler there and less humid than it was here.
Yeah, I had somebody down there too in Fort Lauderdale, and she was like, "Oh, I'm sitting on the beach and it's a cool breeze." I'm like, "What's wrong with this?"
Yeah. That's not the case. Well, that's all right. It's not going to stop us from talking about the news and celebrating and complaining and doing all that kind of stuff. So we'll get on that this morning. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we welcome your letters. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, good morning. I'm just ducky. Did my walk in the light as soon as it came up, and it's very nice, very nice indeed. But then it got hot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I mean, there's really no. Even I'm sure when it was early, it was still humid. Yeah. You're a runner, Judy Patrick. Do you go out in days like this?
We do, but you've got to go earlier. Don't go at all. You've got to go before 7 or even after 7. Remember, it's icky right now, and it's 9:14, 9:15 in the morning. It's going to be oppressive later. But the good news is, we live in upstate New York. This is temporary. There are some people that have this a lot more frequently than we do.
Judy Patrick is with us. Her official title, if you care about such things, is Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. But the important thing that you need to know is that she's our Judy Patrick.
And my another title, Grandma. I like being
grandma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what I hear most.
That's good. That's probably the most important title. Libby Post is with us. We always enjoy having Libby with us. It's a Monday, so she is here, political consultant, and good morning.
Good morning.
How's everything?
Good. Busy. Busy.
Oh, because of campaigns?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Primaries and general?
No primaries for me. I had my primary... there are two sets of primaries. So
yes.
I had my primary in June.
Yes.
On June 28th, and we were successful. And now I'm just looking at the general for 6 races.
All right. Well, we wish you all the luck in the world. Dan Arizari is with us. He is chairman of Capital District Latinos. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm like everybody else dealing with the dog days of August, except I consulted with an expert on the subject, my black lab, Mochi, and she said, don't blame this on the dogs, blame it on the humans.
I agree.
That's true.
I agree.
The dogs get a bad name in this time of year, the dog days of summer. And I'm sorry, what was the name of your lab?
I have two. One is 12. Her name is Nessa. But my little one, my pandemic dog, is Mochi. She's about a year. She's going to be 2 years in October.
Oh, I have
2 years old.
Yeah, we have dogs exactly those ages. Oh, that's great. Good for you. All right. Well, let's get started, and we'll talk about what's happening. Of course, you all know the big story. The big story was, there's happiness in the house. We haven't heard that in a while. 5 decades in the making, the inflation, what's the official name?
Reduction.
Of it? Inflation Reduction Act was passed yesterday in the Senate. After years of failed attempts, Congress is on the cusp of passing the nation's first climate law. the bill passed by the Senate avoiding the political pitfalls of the past by offering only incentives to cut climate pollution, not taxes. So it was a long time in coming, a lot of back and forth, a lot of dealing between Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer, and then with Kyrsten Sinema, and then to keep everybody else in line and make sure you could get the votes. And then you had your, and then you had the tie-breaking vote with Kamala Harris and all of those quote-unquote moderate Republicans, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, Mitt Romney voted against this particular bill. Alan Chartok.
All goes to show you that when we assign names like moderates or progressives, it frequently doesn't mean anything. But it is a major win for Joe Biden, and it's a major win for the Democrats, who know, as Libby will tell you, how to form a circular firing squad with some regularity. So it does look to me as if this is very good news.
Was it the Washington Post that had the headlined article, Joe Biden is doing everything right and having a fantastic month, but everybody still doesn't like him?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got, it's still the hot days of summer. I won't say dog days of summer. Once Labor Day happens, some people will tune in. And then once, we get past the Jewish holidays and into October, then more people will tune in. But they'll really tune in after Halloween, with a week left, because Election Day is November 8th this year.
Right.
So the Democrats have time. Not that they should while it away. They have to keep hitting over and over and over again to build the momentum and build that sense of that block of message that nobody else can cut through. But I think that, you know, this, as well as where people are at on some of these, what, you know, people call it the culture war issues, I call it the war on women issues, where people are on those issues, which are very, very important, that the polling is showing, you know, choice and gun control, both of which I think are women's issues. You know, I think there's an opening in the storm clouds, and a little bit of sunshine's coming through right now.
You know, the Democrats seem to have momentum on their side at this point. They've passed this bill, and I think all of the measures that have happened. You've got the gun safety bill. You've got the Infrastructure Act. You've got the ruling from the Supreme Court on abortion rights. You've got you've got other rulings by the Supreme Court. The question now is, can Democrats continue to do this? You've seen gas prices come down, and get the message out to the people. The other thing I noticed about this was this seems to be Chuck Schumer's victory, not necessarily Joe Biden's victory, although the White House is making pains of taking pains to say that Biden was working the phones this weekend.
You know, I mean, he's been in, quarantine. It'll be his victory when he gets to sign the bill. Then that's when he can claim victory. I mean, you know, but he did his work. But it is, I think right now it's more important for this to be a congressional victory because of the midterms.
Right. People look at Congress and just see a dysfunctional system. Mm-hmm. And it seems like this has worked. You've got prescription drug cap on some
except
of the...
Except insulin.
We'll talk about that in a second.
But people have become so cynical, especially the young people, mm-hmm. that they don't bother to show up and vote. And maybe this will prod them into thinking, oh, maybe it's worth my while to take 15 minutes out of my day on a Tuesday in November and go vote.
Dan Arizari.
Well, I think it's welcome news, but I also think you can rename this bill the day late and a dollar short bill, simply because it's taken so long to get anywhere on the major incentives that President Biden had promised during his campaign, and also because of the inflationary moment that we're living in, people really are going to have a hard time understanding what all this climate stuff, and it's very good, by the way. I work in the sustainability field right now in affordable housing, and this stuff is seismic in terms of its eventual impact. But it's eventual, and it's not going to be seen. The impacts will not be seen like a lot of things that have passed for, you know, a couple of years. And we all know what that means. So while I'm elated and some of the things in this bill are revolutionary and the Democrats ought to be happy about it, I just don't know that it translates into enough impetus to stave off what looks like is going to be a significant red wave, so to speak. So that's where I'm coming at it from.
Yeah, I think the Republicans are their own worst enemy at this point, mm-hmm. because when you come to these primaries, more and more they are picking as their candidates for the general election a far-right Republican, an election denier that's going to have a really hard time winning in a general election. It just seems like that's happening again and again. It doesn't happen all the time, but I think that's going against the Republicans.
Yeah, it happens enough in some of these districts and states where it could really make a difference for the Democrats.
Alan, do you agree with that? Go ahead.
I'm waiting. I'm waiting patiently. I'll have my say. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that
sure.
part of the problem that the Democratic Party is having right now is that it really, the demographic that really is in its corner, according to some of the statistics that we've seen, is more and more, you know, college-educated folk. And the working-class demographic is skewing more towards the Republicans. And who'd have thunk that was even possible? But in that group I'm talking about are Latinos, and some of the statistics that I'm seeing are should be extremely worrisome for the Democratic Party in terms of the loss of this what was once a reliable voting bloc.
Alan?
I agree with that. You know, the fact is that the Democrats are splitting. And so, you know, what was formerly countable is not countable now. And I think you're right.
There was a NPR poll that came out. Inflation has caused serious financial problems for the majority of Native American, Black, and Latino households. The numbers are fairly staggering. 69% for Native American, Black families 58%, and 56% for Latino. This was from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Harvard Chan School of Public Health, finds that all too common experiences for high proportions of Black, Latino, and Native American adults as the U.S. weathers a grueling stretch of high prices and economic uncertainty. In fact, more than half of Latino households report the recent price increases driven by inflation that have caused them, quote, serious financial problems. It's even higher among Native Americans, with that number rising to more than two-thirds of those surveyed. Dan?
Well, I guess I didn't need a study to figure that out. I mean, at the center, at the Cultural Empowerment Community Engagement Center, our headquarters in downtown Albany, we have seen a staggering rise in the amount of people needing basics, needing food, coming in for housing assistance, and things like clothes, bare necessities. And we have been fortunate that we were able to become a food pantry, and more importantly, a culturally appropriate food pantry where people are not just coming in, because most of the people that we're seeing are immigrants, a large number from Latin America. 85% of the people that we have served in just six food pantries have been immigrants. And we just started, like I said, back in May. And the amount of people, I was there for a couple of these, and the amount of people that are coming in that are looking to scrape by is just unbelievable. And then you go to the grocery store. I do a lot of shopping for my family. You go to the grocery store. You go to the dollar store. Dollar store is not the dollar store anymore. It's $1.25, et cetera. And you see people in the dollar store shopping for groceries. Right. I mean, this is a real, real thing. And it's just like every other crisis. When the majority white Americans have a cold, minorities get pneumonia. So that's the comparison that's always been true. And we saw it with COVID. We saw it with the housing collapse. We're seeing it with the pandemic and all the economic ancillary types of impacts it's having. And our community is suffering, and basically suffering in silence.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. We're talking about the passage of the Inflation Reduction Bill. We also, at least in the Senate, we'll talk about the House. We'll also continue on this poll regarding Black, Native American, and Latino families and the serious problems they're facing during this inflationary time. We'll do all of that. We'll welcome your letters, and we'll hear from the BBC News. And then we'll be back right after this. People get hot and bothered when the weather's like this.
No.
So they're not mad at us. There's a lot of letters, a lot of folks that are sounding off this morning, so we'll get to those. We welcome yours as well, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And I should probably pinpoint that and say they're not mad at us yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Because last week, they were a little mad at me.
It's all right. I mean, it's not all right that they're mad at you, but, we can take it.
Yeah,
okay. Rob says, I do not, quote unquote, get the Republican stance on this very diminished bill, which feels made to order for them. It seems to me that rather than standing together and against an inevitable political victory for the Dems, it would have better blunted the midterm election effect, which I assume this is about, to have made it very bipartisan and therefore a non-issue. But of what I read, says Americans want government action on climate change.
Well, nobody said the Republicans were smart. Just vindictive.
I don't know about that. A lot of Republicans think they're smart.
And yes, they do.
And McConnell is usually a better strategist than this. And it seems like this is a big defeat for him.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me see about other letters. We'll go to John. If the American electorate, after all they've witnessed about the Republicans regarding democracy, women's rights, political cowardice, and resolute opposition to any legislation benefiting anyone other than the super rich, decide to give them majorities, or worse, working majorities in either House of Congress, something they denied the Congress in the last one, they deserve to reap the whirlwind that inevitably will result. Stupid is as stupid does.
Well, there are many people who have a lot of money and they are Republicans. And there are many people who don't have a lot of money who think that if they play their cards right, they'll have a lot of money. And that is where the problem between Democrats and Republicans often lies. I don't know what you think, Libby, but to me, there are an awful lot of Democrats who think that someday they're going to be rich and therefore they should be with the Republicans.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think we all hope that we're going to be well funded enough in our jobs and to be able to take care of our families and put a little away for retirement so that we can retire. But I think by and large, Democrats are more concerned with the other than the Republicans are just concerned with themselves. So I get sort of what you're saying, but I don't think it's a blanket statement. I mean, you've got the outliers. You've got the Kristen Sinemas. You've got the Joe Manchins of the world. And, you know, they know that they can play this game and get something for what they want. because they are registered Democrats and they're in the U.S. Senate. But I don't know. I think by and large, Democrats, while they do want to make money and we do want to take care of our families and all of that, we also look out for the other.
Dan?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a messaging issue, and I know Libby's much more well-versed in that aspect of things, but, you know, in this, there's a ton of stuff in this package, right? But there's, like we said, big news on climate. So can the Democrats' message to the all-important, evasive, elusive, you know, whatever generation is the most recent one, WXYZ. Sorry, I don't keep up with that.
But to yeah, the after the millennials, I sort of lost.
Yeah.
About...
But the climate stuff for the younger generation is a key component of you know, the way they look at our failing government and how inept we have been in trying to address that. And this gives them a reason to say, you know what, the only people who care truthfully about climate are the Democrats. Because, yeah, look, they just put this package together. So can the Democrats, I don't know, get on TikTok or, you know, Instagram and message the hell out of this thing in order to try to drive those votes up?
I'll bite. Can they?
The problem is that, Alan, your guess is as good as mine. I think there are people that are savvy enough that see the benefit of that. And I am impressed by some of the messaging that I've seen on cable TV. I think there's one political ad that resonates, I think. It goes something to the effect of, you know, if you want a party that's, you know, going to restrict your freedoms you know, undermine the Constitution, the Republicans are it, vote Democrat. I mean, I think it's pretty succinct messaging. I just don't know, you know, where that message is going. It's if it's in the New York market, I don't know that it's
right
going to sway anybody that's, you know.
We're pretty here, siloed.
Depending on the markets they're playing at. Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, the problem also is that things have gotten so complex in this modern society that boiling things down to an easily digestible message is one of the biggest challenges, right? Because these things are all complex, whether it's inflation, the war in Ukraine, COVID, monkeypox, all of this, you know, stuff that's coming at the current administration. It's not easy to distill, you know, what you're doing to try to make things right into a clear, you know, clarified message, as opposed to the other side, the Republicans, who are, you know, the party of apparently zero-sum politics. They could just sit back and, I don't know if you remember that Atari game, Joe, Duck Hunt?
Yeah, yeah. Duck Hunt was great.
You familiar with that game? Yeah, yeah. So the Republicans are basically playing Duck Hunt with all of the problems that, you know, inflation, boom, the Democrats, you know.
Yeah, all these ducks prices, would come down, boom, and then you would race across. You had a little roller ball, and then you would go, and then you press the button to get the ducks. You know, just, again, they're not real ducks. They're just digital ducks. So please, Libby and your PETA friends, just to calm down.
No. Let's not go there. Now we'll get letters.
But it's a fair point that you right. You go after everything, but then you always, you know, what are you left with? And sometimes those ducks get down a lot farther than you want them to, and ultimately there's a disaster at the end.
Look,
which is what I think when I went back to the point that I made earlier was, you know, the Democrats are really locking in, you know, the college educated folk and the working class not so much. And what is that partially to blame for, or what's to blame for that? Part of it is it's hard to discuss policy, right, and
and make it clear as to why you're doing things, when the other side, all they have to do is sit back and go, they're a party of inflation. You know, they're the party of this, they're the party of that. But you're over here trying to really, you know, make the sausage or whatever you want to say. And it's very complex. So part of the problem is a messaging problem. And part of the problem is governing is just hard, as opposed to, you know, what some other folks who were recently in the White House seem to think about making policy.
I won't ask the question about purples, but although I guess it could be put into this context. However, Alan, let me just ask the simpler question, which is, as you look at these races, even now, 3 months out, do we have undecideds anymore? Is that a thing anymore?
Absolutely. It's absolutely a thing. In my mind, people are making up their minds where their self-interest is met. To me, the Democrats have to offer a message which says you will be better off if you're with us as opposed to somebody else being better off. And I think that that's what it comes down to.
We get this letter from Jay who says, good morning, panel. With the exception of Abraham Lincoln, I can't think of a president that got a bigger plate of crap handed to him than Joe Biden.
It's true.
FDR had a unified country once World War II started, and Obama didn't have to walk into a post-Trump reality. I wonder what fallen political star could save us from DeSantis, because Biden won't run again no matter what he says now.
I think that's wrong. I think Biden will run if he can. If he thinks he can win another term, he's going to run. That's the way it is.
Let's see. We'll go to Anne, who says, we do not need negative energy and thinking at this juncture. I do not like or agree or appreciate the statement a day late and a dollar short. I am sure that Joe Biden supporters did not either. There is good news here. The bill would spend nearly $400 billion on climate and energy programs and set a minimum tax for corporations. The House is expected to pass it this week.
You know, the message is, it's this notion of the emotion, logic, emotion sandwich that we use in messaging. We're going to help you breathe. That's an emotional thing. We passed this bill. Now you're going to be able to breathe better. I mean, you know, it's that sort of thing. We do, the Democrats tend to focus on fact and policy rather than emotion. However, the ad that is running, and I'm sure that ad is running across the country about choice, showing all these different kinds of women, you know, talking about choice, one with cancer, one was a lesbian couple, one was, you know, all different kinds of women, white women, black women, women of color. I think from an emotional standpoint, that ad packed a punch. I think that the one thing the Dems have learned from Trump is that you have to go for the gut. You have to go for the jugular. And there are ways of doing it that's positive. And that's what I think the Democrats need to do. And I agree. I don't think this was a day late and a dollar short. I think that this was an incredible thing. Look, Obamacare passed the same way, right? It passed the same way. It was incredibly close. I think we needed Joe Biden as the vice president to vote.
So, meaning that in the end, you have a win.
Right.
And if it was ugly getting there,
that's
so
life.
Be it.
That's part of the process. But the thing is that now you have Republicans saying, keep your hands off of my Obamacare, right? Because they want their health care. In the long run, with this bill, people will be saying, keep your hands off my clean air. Keep your hands off my tax base. You know, you pay your fair share. The idea, look, I made a profit last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was like a long time coming. And and I paid close to $5,000 in corporate taxes to the feds last year. I mean, I didn't make millions, but I made enough to do that, right? Yeah. The idea that Amazon and some of these other big corporations don't pay anything, it just doesn't make any sense. So this bill is going to correct some of that.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we have many more letters. I would like to also talk about the insulin cap, which was part of this and is a bit surprising. So we'll talk about that as well. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Dana Rosari, Judy Patrick, and Libby Post. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is 49 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Monday, the 8th of August, and we welcome you to our program. A lot to talk about, a lot of input from our listeners, and we have many more letters that we will get to, and we welcome yours as well. panel@wamc.org. Lee writes to us and says, I'll think the seemingly inexplicable way that working class and underprivileged people identify with wealth-oriented Republican policy is largely because they believe they would be wealthy, but for social programs that benefit the minority underprivileged segment of society. They blame the minority population for their own perceived lack of prosperity. That rationale saves their own ego. That from Lee. Then we go to this letter. Alan is right, says Suzanne.
Boy, this is going to be a good one.
It's not simply Republican voters wanting to be rich. They identify with the rich to their own disadvantage. I've been noticing this since the 70s. So human nature since the 70s, I guess, right?
Does that letter mean Republicans or Democrats?
It's not simply Republican voters want to be rich. I think you were saying that.
Yeah.
They identify with the rich.
So the Republicans want to be rich.
What would you call that, Alan? The double, triple, quadruple fake out? Is that
yes, that's what I'd call it.
Yeah. Okay.
So the Republicans want to be rich?
So I think what
Democrats want to be rich.
There you go. That's what Alan was saying, and they looked to the Republicans. And the letter writer is saying, so if we edit this letter in our best, for Libby and I, in our best adjunct professor way, for Alan in his best full professor way, you would say
former.
It's not.
And Judy in her best editor way.
That's right. Absolutely. In the best editor way.
Judy's the expert here.
It's
She takes no guff.
It's not simply Democratic voters want to be rich. They identify with the rich to their own disadvantage. I've been noticing this since the 70s. Does that letter make more sense? All right, we'll move on.
I don't know.
You know, can I just say, I think the vast majority of Americans really don't want to be rich. I mean, and they'd take it if it was offered to them. They just want to live their lives,
right,
be able to put food on the table, have a vacation, buy presents for their kids on their birthdays. I mean, I don't think we all have grand plans for a mansion, you know, at the end of Long Island. I think we just want to be able to pay for our health care, get our kids a good education, and not be worried about money all the time.
Margaret said, just a word about the term inflation reduction. The hope is that this bill will reduce the dangers of inflation and slow down the effects of climate change. Inflation effects will hopefully be ameliorated.
The problem with I'm seeing is, as Dan mentioned, the impact on staples. It's the cost of bread, milk, mm-hmm, eggs, things that everybody needs, and those costs, unless those come down a little bit, I think people are continuing to be concerned. I am seeing some reduction in some of those costs, but man, $5 for a loaf of bread is tough to swallow.
Yeah, yeah, it's physically tough to swallow when you know you paid that much for it,
and you shouldn't swallow it because bread isn't good
for
you.
Well, look, you look at that study that the NPR story, and you see that people are having to make these horrible choices, right? So if your food bill has gone up 25-30%, and you don't have enough in savings for, you know, saved up to cover a month's, you know, the cost of living for a month, you're making calculations, you're making choices, you're deciding whether you put off the electric bill, which, because of climate right now, let's say in New York State, If you're running fans or an air conditioner, your electric bill is ridiculous for the past couple of months. So now you're looking at your rent. And most people, you know, the HUD guidelines for affordability in rent is you pay 30% of your income towards rent. Most people don't pay that, especially in the minority communities. You're talking about people paying 45% of their income on housing. So where do you get that extra cost from? Where do you take it from? Do you not buy your kids, you know, a book bag and the supplies for the fall? Do you take it out of your, you know, the medications that you have to buy, which, by the way, thank you, Republicans, insulin is going to continue to be a ridiculous cost, even though it was created or 100 years ago and certainly should be a lot cheaper than it is now. So you're a minority family. You're looking at these costs, the survival, the cycle that you're in. Are you thinking about the Inflation Reduction Act? Are you thinking about climate change necessarily? I mean, we could argue about how, yes, people of color should be very concerned about climate because they are, as with everything else apparently, the ones who are at the tip of the spear. They're the ones who are going to suffer the most because climate change affects communities of color at a disproportionate rate than it does other folks. But how do you make that argument that a piece of legislation is going to help me when I can barely pay my rent?
That's, well, you make the argument because you can. You say it. It may not be true, as you point out, Dan, but the fact of the matter is you say it.
And as much as it pains me to say this, you say it to the people that you know are going to come out to vote.
Mm-hmm. And who doesn't come out to vote there, Libs?
Well, I mean, when you look at trends, you will see that lower income folks don't necessarily come out to vote. And I mean, we see it all the time here in the city of Albany. And you know, when we do a campaign, we target our voters to make the best uses of our resources. We know who comes out to vote based on voter history. You know, the folks at Working Families Party and Citizen Action and the New York Progressive Action Network and all of those folks do really good work to bring folks who don't necessarily always come out to vote, but it's not sustained. I mean,
it doesn't work, is what you're saying?
Well, no, it's not sustained. They came out, I'm trying to think, this is 2018. They turned people out in Troy against John McDonald. And it was a little closer in Troy than we had expected. But it's not like it happens every single cycle, that we see it every single time.
Because we have to make voting easier.
That is
a big obstacle. Mm-hmm. People are working, they have childcare, they don't have the time. They just don't have the time to go and vote. And if we made it easier, because New York has some of the toughest voting laws in the nation, to be honest, we don't allow a lot of easy access to our voting system. Change that, and we will increase the voter turnout.
Well, now there's no excuse absentee ballot voting. You know, during the pandemic, when we mailed ballots out to every single person, the amount of voting went through the roof. And I think maybe we should look at doing
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and yes, folks, it's a secure way of voting. You don't have to worry as long as LaJoy, whatever his name is.
Louis DeJoy.
Yeah. The Postmaster General doesn't get his way. Totally.
All right. Let's get to one more or two more letters and then we'll go to a break. We have this one from Michael. I have to point out that the Democratic Party establishment has been ruthlessly committed to crushing the one politician in particular who has demonstrated a lifelong commitment to advancing policy goals in support of the working class. See the recent votes of said politician's amendments to the IRA, Medicare expansions, reinstating the child tax credit, crushed. Abandoning the working class is a choice that Democratic leaders have made.
Who's the Republican?
Well,
we're
that's
talking
what
about?
I don't know.
But I do wish the expanding the child care, child tax credit had been included as well as expanding access to Medicaid funding for child care in the states that have lowered it, especially if they're forcing women to have babies. Let's help them take care of them.
Oh, no. I mean, they're pro-fetus but not pro-child.
One more letter. Jack, as good as the news is about the bill that passed, it means nothing to Americans. Please remember 1966. President Johnson and Democrats delivered Medicare, Medicaid, war on poverty, civil rights, voting rights, higher education, etc. Americans responded by voting for Republicans. The Democrats lost 47 seats in 1966. Please also do not say it was Vietnam. It wasn't. Vietnam protests in 66 were still isolated to a few large cities and colleges. Americans do not care about these things. And the letter is titled, I'm a Debbie Downer.
Agreed.
But I agreed that she's a downer, not that she's right.
Correct.
All right, let's take a break. We will be back. Oh, my goodness. Ray Graff is back. We've
missed him so.
It's been horrible. I didn't get a chance to say welcome back when in the first hour, but it's great to see his smiling face across the glass, and it really is smiling.
We are so lucky to have him.
Very nice, and we're very happy that he's back. We will hear his dulcet tones right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. We welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org if you would like to get your letter in. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Dan Irizarry, Judy Patrick is how it's pronounced, and Libby Post. Good morning. Welcome. They're making up our panel. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. I did want to talk about, we mentioned this in passing, Dan brought it up a couple of times, and I promised that we would get back to it and spend more time on it specifically, and that is the GOP and insulin costs. Republicans yesterday blocked the cap on insulin costs for millions of patients. The senators moved to strip a $35 price cap on insulin under private insurance from the Inflation Reduction Act. So you can reduce inflation, but not the cost of insulin. That will go up. The insulin cap is a long-running ambition of Democrats who want it to apply to patients on Medicare and private insurance. Republicans left the portion that applies to Medicare patients untouched, but stripped the insulin cap for other patients. Bipartisan talks on a broader insulin pricing bill faltered earlier this year. The Senate parliamentarian earlier in the week ruled that part of the Democrats' cap included in the Inflation Reduction Act did not comply with the rules that allow them to advance a bill under the process known as reconciliation, a tactic that helps them avert a GOP filibuster that gave the Republicans an opening to jettison it. So the question is, did they jettison it just because they could and they wanted to get back, or that there's a real problem? Some Republicans did support the price cap in the 57-43 vote for the measure, but not enough joined Democrats in support of it to meet the threshold for passage. Alan.
Well, look, it just proves, once again, that there is health care in the United States is not all it should be, and that we know an awful lot of people are insulin dependent in this country. And if you don't help them, what's government for?
You know, I looked up before the statistics on diabetes and who needs insulin and who's paying through the nose. And, you know, it's overwhelmingly people of color. So it's 14.5% of American Indians and Alaskan Natives, 12.1% of non-Hispanic blacks, 11.8% of Hispanics, 9.5% of Asian Americans, and 7.4% of non-Hispanic whites. And so, you know, I remember when I was doing a lot of work for FQHCs, the Federally Qualified Health Centers, and we would talk a lot about healthcare disparities. Diabetes is part of that disparity, and it can be treated. But when you're letting big pharma, which, by the way, insulin used to be cheap, and now it's not. What is the issue here other than making a profit off of poor people? You know, they needed to do this, and it should be done. And it's criminal what Big Pharma is doing regarding insulin. I get that they have to charge for the big drugs that they do because of all the research that goes into it and all that sort of stuff. But insulin's been around for a really long time, and it used to be really cheap. Now it's not.
7 million Americans require insulin daily. A Yale University study found that 14% of those insulin users are spending more than 40% of their income after food and housing costs on the medicine they need to stay alive.
It's insane. It's just insane. This should not be an issue. This should not be like this. Why now? Why all of a sudden? Well, not all of a sudden, but over the last few years, why have these prices gone through the roof? You know, it's like the EpiPens. That's Joe Manchin's daughter. She's making millions. She's increased the cost of EpiPens because it's her pharmaceutical company astronomically. And she's making millions off of people. And now it's harder for parents to carry those EpiPens when they need them in case their kids have some kind of allergic response. And it just, this makes no sense. Doesn't it's infuriating.
Well, it makes sense for the pharmaceutical companies. You've been seeing these vague commercials on television for months now, talking about the advantages of research in the medical field, and they're so vague you don't know what the heck they're talking
but
about.
But we're working hard for you.
We're working and you know, trying to subliminally make the message that that the government should not interfere in drug pricing at all. When anyone who's ever gotten any prescription, if you're lucky enough to have good insurance, you'll pay maybe a $5 or $10 copay. But if you look at what they actually cost, it's often very ridiculous how much that tube of ointment or that pill, somebody is paying the cost and somebody is reaping the profit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand. Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just saying that Capital District Latinos has gotten money from the Kidney Foundation to do outreach in the Latino community because it's having, you know, diabetes is impacting communities of color disproportionately, as we probably all know. And it really is a problem because during the pandemic, a lot of people did not go and see their doctors.
Right.
And so some of these illnesses got worse during the pandemic because of that. And so, again, this is just something that's impacting our community. And if the Democrats were smart, they would be messaging this failure to respond to the crisis around this particular drug cost because of its disproportionate impact on minority communities.
And you wonder, I mean, I don't understand drug pricing anyway. I mean, it's just insane. It sort of is like the old airline. I remember the New York Times used to put a thing where they would show the body of a plane and they would say, on average, you know, this person paid $78 for this flight and this person paid $680. Well, how does that work? And that's a lot, much like it is with pharmaceuticals because of the various deals that the insurance companies have with these pharmaceutical companies and what you pay and mm-hmm. what you don't pay. And I had one a prescription recently. I went in and I said, hey, I'm here to pick up my prescription. And they said, oh, well, you're not due to get it until 2 weeks. And I said, well, I need it now. And they said, well, then you will have to pay out of pocket. And I said, well, how much is out of pocket? And they said, $730. And I said, well, that seems steep considering before I only paid like $4, you know? And they said, but let me see. We'll go through and we'll see if we can find a coupon. And I ended up paying $20 for it. Not a hell of a coupon if you think about it.
Right. I mean, we had something similar before we went on vacation. Lynn went out of one of her scripts and, you know, it was at Caremark getting filled, but it hadn't made it to our house yet.
Yes.
And we went through this whole thing and we were able to get a week's worth of this drug. And it didn't cost us $700. It was, you know, but we did have to pay out of pocket. I mean, it was just, it's, It's insane.
Crazy.
It really is. It's very crazy making. And honestly, I keep talking about going on Medicare soon because, in 6 months I'll be 65 and I'll save on my.
No.
Yes, darling. You know what that means.
No.
And it's just, I'm waiting to find out which of my medications, and I know which one, Xarelto, is going to cost me an arm and a leg. And I have to make a decision.
That was all about, folks, if you didn't understand the interchange, because Libby was a very young student of mine.
In 1982 and 1983.
Let's see. We go to Thea, who says, as a cardiologist, I'll point out that availability/affordability of insulin is crucial not only to manage diabetes, but to thereby decrease the incidence of heart disease, stroke, peripheral vascular disease, kidney disease, etc. So, yes, it is an important drug. And now you wonder what they will do, if anything, to sort of make good on this.
Right, because this is an issue that affects a lot of people. Maybe not 20-year-olds who don't take a lot of medicines yet, or 30-year-olds, but they eventually will. But I think this is an issue that hits home for a lot of people, and it may hit home come November. I mean, there are so many factors working against Republicans, I think, at this time. They were cruising into 20 this year, with all the chips
they
in their pocket, and they seem to be throwing them away one by one.
They're arrogant, and that's why. And, it really is the arrogance of power, and they think they had it made, and they thought, oh, we're going to take all of these seats, and our people are going to win, and, oh, yeah, okay, so they're the Trumpers, but once they get here, they'll calm down, which we know, look at, Green and Boebert, that hasn't happened. And so they were caught proverbially with their pants down, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Kevin McCarthy's already measuring for the drapes in Nancy Pelosi's office.
That's right. That's right.
And
January 6th, let's not forget, the hearings are going to resume in September.
Correct.
And Joe, what was that?
That's
going
to bring us back to that day.
Pants down, wasn't it?
No, I was going to make a cheap shot about that. She needed new drapes because they were ripped down when they came in and took over her office. So
that's right.
They should have the measurements. Yeah.
Right.
But the other thing that you look at here is I may have lost this in my brain.
It's floating there. Just look for it.
Yeah, I know. I'll look for it. All right. I'll come back. Let's see. Where do we go here? I want to go to... what were you talking about before, Libby? Before you were saying about...
January 6th?
Yeah, before that, though.
Well, Judy was talking about how the Republicans are letting... snatching defeat out of the jaws of whatever it is, however that works.
Yes, that's exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
They cruised into the year with all the chips in their pocket.
Right, right.
So what do you think is happening there where that they've lost the pulse? Because I asked this question before, is it just because they can, or is it because they really think it's a winning strategy?
I almost think it's because they think that Donald Trump is the pulse. I think they're misreading it.
Yeah.
I think it's a pulse for a lot of – it's for the fringe, but it's not for the General Electric. General Electric.
But electorate, yes.
But I think the January 6th, Republicans came in thinking the Democrats were beating a dead horse on January 6th. Mm-mm. And I think the hearings this summer have resonated with people in a way that Republicans did not believe was going to happen.
And choice. I mean, it's a double whammy.
And choice. The Supreme Court and all the other Supreme Court decisions.
I mean, there are Republicans who are like couching their stance on choice now. They're softening their stuff. And it's not working because the Roe decision is the Roe decision, and you voted these people in, and you believe their lies, and that's the end of it.
So what are they saying?
I don't know what they're saying because I saw the headline, and I didn't read the article, but I think it's true that...
Oh, you're so like every other
I know I am. I know, I'm sorry. I have to go through, But I think that they're, you know, well, you know, it's okay if it's in, for instances of rape and incest, you know, that's not okay. We have to protect. But, you know, that 10-year-old girl in Ohio, you know, she, it was okay that she got the abortion. But, you know, how, why did, I mean, I know what's going on in their heads is, why did she put herself in a situation where she would get raped, a 10-year-old? I mean, that's, they're blaming the victim.
Yeah, and in the meantime, the national politicians may be trying to distance themselves. In the meantime, the state legislatures are adopting these really right. hardcore yep. anti-abortion right. legislation, and that's what the people are seeing who are going to vote right. in November.
That's right, and Kansas, I mean, for Kansas to say no to the restrictions, it buoyed a lot of people. So I think, you know, there's choice. I think January 6th, it'll be back in the news. I know that that has really resonated with people. Liz Cheney, I mean, she's going to lose, but she's going to lose in a way where ultimately she'll win.
The headline in the New York Times, Liz Cheney is ready to lose, but she's not ready to quit. The Republican says her crusade to stop Donald Trump will... Oh, I finally remember what I was going to say.
Oh, what? Okay. Don't lose it.
Hurry up.
Say it now. Say it now.
I was going to ask Alan about this because Lindsey Graham
yes.
and Chris Murphy were on the Sunday talk show yesterday, yeah. Yeah. and they were talking. I'll ask you about this, and I'll ask Libby about this, but we're on the talk shows yesterday going back and forth about same-sex marriage, and I don't – what happened – I mean – I know that Lindsey Graham is, you know,
Miss Lindsey. Yes.
Stop. That Lindsey Graham is a little, you know, erratic sometimes. But man, I could not make out what he was saying yesterday.
Well, I think he's lost it. You know, I mean, I remember in the 2016 primaries, he was like, Trump is evil. And then once Trump got elected, he was right there. That's
no,
all
but
I
that's
have to
not
say.
Unusual. They With do any, that. They're a bunch of hypocrites,
yes,
and they do that.
They are. But, yeah, he's drunk the Kool-Aid. And it's hard for some of these guys who have drunk the Kool-Aid because they saw themselves rising politically now to backtrack it because people are going to say, but. And so it's,
well, they need
it's
those,
an interesting
they need
dilemma.
Those primary votes. They have to have the primary votes. And the
That's
fact
right.
that they're hypocrites is not unusual in politics.
No.
Right?
Yeah. And then when you see him being interviewed next to Chris Murphy, there is a, how do I put this politely? There seems to be a difference in strategy and common sense.
Isn't Lindsey even trying to take back that famous speech he made the night of the insurrection where
yes.
he said, I've had enough? He's trying to...
We've had a lot of good times together, but now it's time to move on, my friend.
Yeah.
Right.
That one?
Yes, that speech. He's trying to couch it in that he didn't mean what we all knew he meant. And he took back within 6 hours. But now he's trying to say he didn't really mean what
I
he
I didn't
was
really
saying.
Say that. I didn't mean what I said. I didn't say what I meant. I mean, it's, you know, the backtrack, the art of the backtrack.
Dan?
Well, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how, you know, the lack of leadership on the part of the Republicans. So they had the perfect moment, right, after January 6th, and everybody's coming in and making these grand statements to really divorce themselves from this undemocratic vein that is running through the Republican Party. And, you know, the contrast is between Liz Cheney, who said, you know, democracy is too high a price to pay. The loss of democracy is too high a price to pay to constantly, you know, back this man who seems dead set on just reversing all of our traditions and our way of being. And, you know, then you have Lindsey Graham, who's, you know, he's like that, those blow up. Dolls on the side of the road there by the used car.
Oh yeah, places. I love those ones that go
yeah.
back
they
and
wave
forth.
Back and
yes.
forth. Yeah.
I love those.
Yeah, yeah, that's Lindsey Graham. They should, you know, they should probably put his face on some of those because it's just, you know, that's the winds of, you know, political influence are really what, you know, what motivates him. If if the Republicans are denying the vote or just undermining democracy, then, you know, the MAGA folks, then that's the way Lindsey Graham is going to blow. And that's true of the Republican Party writ large. And it's a shame because they had a moment in which the cost might not have been as dear as they made it out to be, of leadership, that is. Yeah. Tell your base the truth.
I think
Tell them that he lost, and be a leader, and then break the fever dream. But nope, they decided not to.
Liz Cheney is seeing another moment, I think, ahead for herself. I was talking to a diehard Democrat this weekend who said they had sent her $100. Mm-hmm. And she's getting money mm-hmm. from Democrats who oppose, who do not agree with her on her conservative policies. But they see her as someone they want to support, especially in that primary coming come September. But
absolutely.
I think she can, she sees the Republican, she sees herself having a big role in the reconstituted Republican Party whenever they get around to doing it.
And following her father's footsteps. In other words, these are the George Bush Republicans, let's face it, and who think that they've been ousted by the Trumpians. And so they're going to go the way they're going.
Now, there was a reference to the fact that she hasn't spent all the money she's acquired in campaign contributions, leaving people to mm-hmm. consider the fact that she may be saving it for another
presidential run.
You're right.
Well, a lot of people are thinking that, but somehow it does not compute in my feeble brain that she's going to be the president of the United States or even close to it.
It seems to me very hard for a diehard Democrat to look at her record over the last however many years, and except on this particular issue, come away and think, oh, all right, this sounds good.
Look, you know,
On my two issues.
Choice
and gay rights. She's good on gay rights because her sister's a lesbian, right? And even Dick is good on gay rights. Choice, I think that, you know, for me, that's a deal breaker. I think that she can temper her perspective, perhaps. Not that I'm saying she should be president, not in the least, but she is showing what a true patriot really is in terms of wanting to uphold the Constitution. And, you know, I find it funny because Cheney, her father, was involved in Watergate, and that was a bit of a workaround on the Constitution, too. And everybody seems to have forgotten that. But, you know, he wasn't one of the burglars or anything like that. But he was involved in the administration then. I get it.
And
why
vice
people,
president.
Yeah, and then it was
and
vice president.
And shot a guy in the face. But go ahead.
Right. Duck hunting.
Duck hunting. And actually, he was de facto president, let's be honest. But, you know, I understand why people in the Democratic Party are giving her some support because she has been so eloquent on the democratic principles of our Constitution.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what resonates with people. And, you know, Kissinger's a nice guy, but he's young, and his name is a little hard to pronounce, and he's going to leave. Cheney, everybody knows, it's a family name. It's been around for a long time, and she's not going to go away.
All right. We have just about 40 seconds here. I'm going to read a couple of letters and then we'll take a break and have our last time together here. Travis says, my question is, if people are ate better and exercise regularly, would they need less medication? Carolyn says,
answer yes.
Advertising on TV is expensive. The ads for drugs outnumber most everything else. Our prescription costs pay for these ads, like cigarettes and alcohol. Maybe these ads should be banned as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
because those ads make people think they have an ailment.
Ain't going to happen.
Right. Restless leg syndrome. That was the one that got me the most. It was like, really? This is a thing?
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Dan Arizari, and Libby Post make up our group. Panel at WAMC.org is where you can go for letters. We have a final 14 minutes together, so we can make the best of it. I was sitting at home yesterday trying to stay cool, and I was watching my beloved Philadelphia Phillies win against the Washington Nationals, and it was a lovely game, and they were celebrating the 1980 World Series win by the Philadelphia Phillies. And so they had a lot of the players there that came on, and it was an alumni day, and they were making a big deal about it. And of course, growing up as a kid, that was my, you know, we were just over the moon that the Phillies had won the World Series. Well, Pete Rose was part of that team, and Pete Rose, they brought Pete Rose in yesterday. Now, just to give you a little backstory, the Pete Rose is banned from Major League Baseball for betting on games.
Right. Now, while he was manager and a player.
Yeah. Now, we can argue till we're blue in the face over that issue, and I that doesn't mean that I feel that it should be argued about, but there are still arguments about that as to whether he should or should not be in the Hall of Fame. Okay. So that, let's take that for what it's worth. Then, in 2017, the Philadelphia Phillies have what they call their Wall of Fame. And they said, oh, well, it's not the Hall of Fame, it's the Wall of Fame. And
it's just here.
And regardless, it's only based on what you've done on the field in the game. So we're going to put Pete Rose on the Wall of Fame. And then all hell broke loose. In the middle of all hell breaking loose, a woman came forward and said that she was sexually assaulted as a teenager by Pete Rose and made that allegation. As a result of that, right in the midst of the Me Too movement, the Philadelphia Phillies said, oh, maybe we shouldn't put him on the Wall of Fame. So we're not going to do that. Now, proving that somewhere there's a lot of dumb guys in boardrooms in Major League Baseball teams, they said, oh, well, let's invite him to Alumni Day, and we'll bring him in, and we'll celebrate him on that day. So they bring out Pete Rose yesterday. He's 81 years old. I know. He was on the field for the first time since the team called off the plans to honor him with the induction to its Wall of Fame in 2017. So then they announce him, and he goes out, and the crowd goes wild.
Sure.
There he is, 81-year-old Pete Rose, crowd goes wild.
He didn't hustle onto the field.
No,
though, did he?
No.
But your point is?
But my point is he goes out, and then they bring him back in, and for some unknown reason, they put him in front of a bank of microphones. And this is where things go badly. So Alex Coffey, a female baseball reporter, a very accomplished female baseball reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, asked him about the fact that what was it like for him to be back given that a woman had claimed that she had a sexual relationship when she was a minor, 15, and he was 33. I'm not here to talk about that, Rose said. Sorry about that. It was 55 years ago, babe. And that's when you knew, oh dear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then.
I mean, the fact that he said it's 55 years ago was sort of affirming that it happened, right?
Well, he was saying it was 55 years ago, but then calling her babe didn't do any.
No,
that didn't.
That
didn't help any.
Right.
And also, to your point, Alan, we're not here to talk about something that happened 55 years ago. No, we're there to celebrate something that happened 42 years ago, which, okay, just putting that out. But anyway, then I'm here for the Philly fans. I'm here for my teammates. I'm here for the Philly organization. And who cares what happened 50 years ago? So you shouldn't be thinking about that because you weren't born and you don't know a damn thing about it. So don't talk about it. Now, In testimony in federal court in 2017, a woman alleged that she had a sexual relationship with Rose that began when she was below the age of consent. The woman, identified as Jane Doe, said in a sworn statement in court that the relationship started in 1973 and continued for a few years. Sometime after that, Pete Rose and I began meeting at a house in Cincinnati, the woman said. He was with the Cincinnati Reds at this point, not with the Philadelphia Phillies. It was a house where, before my 16th birthday, Pete Rose began a sexual relationship with me. This sexual relationship lasted for several years. Pete Rose also met me in locations outside of Ohio where we had sex. In court filings, Rose admitted to having sex with a woman, but said he believed she was 16.
What difference does it make? He was 30-something.
That was the age of consent in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And that it began sometime in 1975, not in 73. Okay. And he was 34 years ago, or 34 years old, rather.
So he was 18 years her senior, I guess.
That's right. So now, so this hullabaloo is started in the press room of the Philadelphia Phillies. And then they say, oh, Pete, you really stepped in it. And then Pete and his team go over into the corner and they decide they're going to make the situation better. Then they bring Alex Coffey, the reporter, over to Pete Rose. And he said that he wanted to talk to her. And he said, I'm sorry if I offended you. Will you forgive me if I sign 1,000 baseballs for you before saying sorry?
What a stupid man. What a crude man.
Yeah.
What a disgrace to baseball.
Yeah, really.
So there's the story. Wait a minute.
And then he went up in the broadcast booth, right?
And then he went up in the broadcast booth. That while all this was happening, I assume the broadcast team of Tom McCarthy and John Kruk were unaware of some of what was going on, although why they didn't get that, who in the Philly organization made the decision that it was okay for him to go up there. John Kruk, who had been out for a while because he had testicular cancer, is standing there. Pete Rose walks in and says, oh, John, last time I saw you, you had 2 balls. There you go.
Yeah.
So that's what we're dealing with.
Right. That's exactly what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a guy who's obsessed with what's between his legs. And so, you know, thinking that a woman, a professional, the journalist, could be bought off by 1,000 baseballs. I mean, give me a break. You know, his opinion of women is in the gutter. And he does not deserve a microphone or any kind of platform at this point.
Now, there were a couple of things that were brought up in the in Twitter on this. And I thank my dear friend Judy Patrick who sent me this link. But what's fascinating about it was the people on Twitter were saying, okay, well, you should certainly be vilified. No question about it. But what were the Philadelphia Phillies thinking?
Well, there is
like,
that.
Like, what in the world were they thinking?
They're probably going to sign him to do play-by-play for the rest of the season.
How are they doing, by the way?
They're doing all right.
They won the game yesterday, is it?
11-13 to 1.
What
place
are they in?
That doesn't matter.
Sure,
they're a game out of the wild card.
A game out of the wild card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
But the argument continues about the Hall of Fame. I hear, and that got renewed yesterday as well. It's like, this is America's pastime. I know that they're, you know, what about this guy? What about that guy? There are a lot of people out there who are doing bad things. But Major League Baseball makes a big deal about promoting all the good deeds that their multi-million-dollar players make to people. So if you're gonna play that game, you got to hold them to a higher standard, or at least a higher standard for Pete Rose. I just want him to have a normal human being standard. I guess it's too late for that.
Well, yeah, it is a little late for that.
And a lot of people were saying that if you wanted to, you know, if Pete Rose wants to show up at baseball shows and sign baseballs and sell pictures and do all of that stuff, and people are interested in it, well, then so be it. You know, that's their decision. You can't stop it. That's, you know, let him make a buck. But to have a team,
right,
or to have a team that will not put them on the Hall of Fame because he is toxic, then move ahead to invite him to be honored seems odd.
Well, you know, I mean, there's no accounting for stupidity. I mean, I just...
They had to cancel the celebration 2 years ago when it was should have been held because it was the anniversary date because of the pandemic. Maybe they should have just shelved the event entirely. Yeah. Have they won a championship since 1980?
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. They did. They could have celebrated that one.
The Yankees had a celebration every time they had an anniversary of a world championship.
So they'd
be having them
year.
All the time. Yeah.
Hey, I'm a Mets fan.
I'm a Mets fan too.
They're 6.5 games out. I'm a very happy girl. They're ahead by 6.5 games.
Alan, do you want me to bring you into the conversation?
Yeah, only to say that I remember when the Mets got started, they had the world's best Mets fan contest. And I registered it. I was writing my doctoral dissertation or something like that at the time. And I said, I have to win this because, you know, the idea that somebody who is an academic would win this would be very good for them. And, of course, I didn't get to first base. I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, baseball teams never make
silence.
The right decisions, Alan.
What did you say?
They're always making bad decisions, those Major League Baseball teams. They did it with Rose.
Yeah.
They did it with you. You were deprived.
They should have given me you know.
All right, and then we'll end on this controversy, and then we'll go away. A lot of letters about you, Libby.
I
about restless
yes.
leg syndrome.
Yep.
You dismissed, I believe one letter writer said you were being snide.
I didn't think so.
About restless leg syndrome.
I don't think she was being snide. And of course, I have a twin brother who had a terrible case of restless leg syndrome. So I know it's serious.
Restless leg.
Not that I was in the same bed, I wasn't.
Restless leg is a thing, and anybody who's ever spent a horrible night awake, unable to relax their limbs, can affirm that. The human body is complex, and just because we've not experienced a particular symptom, we'd be mean to mock someone who has. I don't think you're mocking.
I am sorry if I have insulted anybody or made anybody feel bad. My thing was just about, here is the pharmaceutical companies, once again, exploiting something that's wrong with people, and all, I mean, it came out of nowhere. It really did. And they exploit the people who suffer from this, and then make other people who think they might have it go to their doctors. So it's just part of the pharmaceuticals marketing plan of making you think you're sick and that you need a drug to fix you.
All right, we are done. My thanks to everybody who was with us, and we appreciate your participation. Thanks to Dan Arizari. Thanks to Judy Patrick and Libby Post. Alan, thank you very much. Always wonderful to have you.
And vice versa.
Thank you so much. We'll be back right after this.